As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Some people eat fish, some people eat steak, some others just like eating their greens. But if you're searching for the single greatest meal you can make, then don't be looking any further than beans. I'm singing beans, beans, a musical fruit. They're good for the planet and super healthy and good. There's beauty to behold in every culture's cuisine, but there ain't nothing any better than beans.
Good morning, world, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network, a fine network. It's Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. I'm G.E. Skeets here in the Classic Factory, and alongside me, as always, Tass Mellis.
Podcast listeners, this is for you.
Next to him, it's the bearded one, my top shot hot boy, Trey Kirby.
Ayo!
Ayo! And last but not least, over yonder, making the magic happen, super producer JD.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. If you love beans, hit the like button and subscribe. Podcast listeners, 5-star ratings and reviews. 5 beans only here for No Dunks. Lots of news later in the show and, of course, Tweet of the Night. But we once had 3 games on last night. Game 2s finally had a road win or two, which is nice to get some series 1-1. But let's start with the one that's 2-0 because that's Minnesota taking the 2-0 lead on the Suns behind 25 points, some great defense from Jaden McDaniels. He was the star in this one.
Yeah.
A lot of Bulls players played really well, but he is the takeaway from this one with 25 points, 10 of 17 shooting, 8 boards. Great defense, like I said, a plus 24. And it was like a layup line for this guy, a dunk line.
Mm-hmm.
He had like 3 or 4 dunks because it was a bit of an ole defense there from the Suns. But they're up 2-0.
We'll get to Jaden in a second. I was just so surprised by the Suns and their lack of effort in this game. They're such a top-heavy team. They rely on their stars so much that those stars need to put forth effort all the time. And that just was not happening. The stars didn't want it enough in this game. I think Logan Roy can go to this team after it into the locker room and say, I love you, but you are not serious people. They were not serious. They tried. Listen, Nurkic played real hard, throwing his body around. Eric Gordon was very good off the bench. Drew Eubanks was good off the bench.
Well,
you know,
moments.
He did enough.
It was weird that there was a stretch where Eric Gordon and Drew Eubanks were playing the best for the Phoenix Suns,
indeed.
And that's not a good sign.
Yeah, right. They just had to put forth more effort.
Yeah.
I mean, you can look at Bradley Beal. There's just so many moments. He had Gobert on a switch at the three-point line. He went by Rudy Gobert. No problem. So stick your Bradley Beal butt in him and try and throw up a layup. You had space. Instead, he passed it out. It didn't make sense when you rely on these guys to be able to score. The first possession, third quarter, Frank Vogel says, you know what? We need to rely on guys that are at the top of our order here. You know what? I'm going to put Bradley Beal in a post-up opportunity against Mike Conley because that's our advantage. He just passed right out of it. He just wasn't looking to take advantage of it. Next possession, team pushing the ball, and Bradley Beal just stepped out of bounds. Now, that was just a flub, but I just didn't see the effort at all times. I mean, Devin Booker just had a bad night. He missed two wide open shots. He wasn't in a good flow from the first game where he had foul trouble. Then his third one, it was a contested shot. And then he missed that one. Then the fourth one, he went and got the rebound of that one and scored. He was just mad. He was looking at all of his teammates on a defensive possession and saying, "We got to talk." It's just like they weren't there.
No.
They just all weren't there together. So it's not like they weren't trying. And Jaden McDaniels and all of them were great. But at the same time, it really just can't happen. It just strictly can't happen. And Booker and Beal, there's one possession where they both had the ball and they decided, okay, we're going to do a little playmaking and then we're not going to shoot. We're not going to go after it. We'll just pass to Drew Eubanks. Again, I mean, Eubanks, again, there's so much. They lost a game where Edwards and Towns scored a combined 27 points. Yeah. It's freaking hard to do. It just wasn't there. 4 minutes left. Sorry, last thing. I'm ranting because it was just surprising. But 4 minutes left. Down 17. Frank Vogel cleared the bench. He said, okay, David Wrighty, hot body, you get in. Nasir Little, you get in. Josh Okogie, you get in. And then it was down 17. Durant did hit a bucket. That forced the Timberwolves to call a timeout, so it was 15 points. And then the Suns said, you know what? We want to go back in. We all want to go back. The starters went back in. Okay, you're going to put forth effort now. And then 2 minutes later, it was just over again.
Right.
And then those dudes got to play. Not a lot of effort, especially with Grayson Allen going down again with an ankle injury. Those dudes at the top just weren't trying enough. So, yeah, we got the deuces, the game two deuces, one by the road team and the other ones. But in this one, this was a dud for the Suns anyway.
Yeah, Tass is right. The Suns' big three only scored 52 points on 45 shots. That's not going to cut it. We saw when they went 2-2 against the Nuggets last year, it was Booker and Durant combining for basically 80 points in back-to-back games. So far in this series, when the going gets tough, Phoenix hasn't been able to get going. They lack, I don't know what it is, the cohesion. They didn't play a ton of games together, these guys, right? Like, they don't know exactly what they can rely on. In game one at the end of the third quarter, a 21-5 run for Minnesota basically ended the game. The crowd got into it. Edwards is talking trash to KD. Everything flipped Minnesota in that moment. Same thing happened in this game.
Yep.
Game two, 12-0 run at the end of the third quarter. Crowd gets right into it. Once again, Minnesota rides the momentum into the fourth quarter. They had an 11-0 run. They had a 6-0 run. And the Suns just didn't feel like they could get back into it at all with effort or anything. It was like, way too much Drew Eubanks. Like, I'm sorry, this guy shouldn't be taking two lefty hooks in the fourth quarter. He shouldn't be playing in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
But yeah, also, like, too much Nurkic. Like, Nurkic had more touches than Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant took 15 shots in this game. It's almost like they forget that he's out there sometimes. And
yeah,
KD, I think, like, throughout his career, he's never been a guy that's like, I've got a mismatch, I got to have the ball every single time, because he likes to play the team game. And he's a great, like, off-ball player as well. But they need to get him more involved because they're just not efficient offensively, and he's like got their best chance. He's got their best matchup. He's matched up with Towns quite a bit. Shout out to Towns. The guy's giving it his all out there. He's making some dumb fouls and stuff, but at least he's competing
yeah,
on that end. But it seems like all the Suns want to do, run a switch, get Gobert onto somebody and attack Gobert. But Gobert's awesome. Like, Gobert's a good defensive player, and they've got guys around him who make it tough as well. There's got to be something else figured out offensively for Phoenix.
Yeah, Rudy through two games has been amazing. He has definitely not been played off the floor. He's guarding everyone that he gets matched on. He's hedging, he's switching, he's dropping, he's obviously rebounding. He somehow lights out at the free throw line, which is, you know, found money for Rudy Gobert and the Wolves. He's 12 of 14 at the line through two games.
Yep.
He is not a good free throw shooter. I think he's a 64% free throw shooter during the season, but he's lights out there right now. He's been awesome. McDaniel's defense, next level. And even Ant in a bad offensive game, and Cat for that matter, you're right, there's effort there still. Ant made some great defensive plays. Obviously was still playmaking, playing with like an edge, where you cannot say that for a majority of these Suns guys. And like Durant, yeah, I'd like to see him be a little more aggressive, wanting the ball and attacking mismatches, because everything sort of is a mismatch, as great as McDaniels is defensively. But his defense too, man, that was the whole thing. Like, there were so many times where Kevin Durant's guy was like blowing by him. A lot of that, you know, McDaniels, there's a lot of switches happening. I get that. The communication was poor. But this guy, as great as he is defensively, McDaniels should not be scoring 25 points. Because
no,
it was, yeah, he had a couple threes, great. There were so many layups, so many dunks, where there's just like, you can look at the photos on Getty Images and you got to squint to find a Suns player even close to him. It's wild. So bad, bad effort. And I got duped. I got tricked by those Suns wins at the end of the season against this team. Great matchup. They looked good. They were fighting over the last, 10 games of the season. They played a lot of good teams, Phoenix did. Sort of got out of the play-in. You know, a little lucky to do that. And just, we thought, okay, they maybe got it going. A little reps going with their big three. And this has not been the case. They've been completely outplayed. And now their season comes down to Friday night. Mm-hmm. Game three. Like, that'll decide everything. I'm not ready to say it's completely over, but you definitely don't have a lot of confidence in them winning four of the next five. But game three is everything here.
Totally. The Suns may come back and try in game three. It's a weird freaking team.
They may roll over and die.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's
for sure.
Possible, too.
Listen, defensively, when you see Jane McDaniels and Mike Conley lead the team in shots, I think they may be totally happy with that. They gave those guys open corners over and over and over, and Conley and Jaden McDaniels shot open shots.
They made
them
pay.
And Jaden McDaniels had two great games in March where he was both 26-point games, and I thought, wow, if they can get this in the playoffs, then they're going to be awesome. I didn't know it was coming. Last year, he broke his hand before the playoffs, and he wanted this to be his return here, and it obviously happened. He didn't play against the Denver Nuggets last year. The great game from him. I'm just more shocked at guys not shooting shots on the Minnesota Timberwolves than the defense, actually, for me, because they were fine in a way, you know, to Anthony Edwards, to take away from him, to show him bodies a lot of the time, and to deal with Towns. They did okay. And again, there were some guys who tried. And Nurkic was throwing his body around as much as possible. But as I said, just numbers-wise, BBD, Beal, Booker, Durant, those dudes have to be shooting. They have to be shooting, and they just
worked. Well, in order to shoot, you have to have the ball in your hands. How many times did they just cough it up? Yeah. Was that ball slippery or what last night? They had 19 turnovers. Many of them for Phoenix. Very careless. Quite frankly, a lot of them unforced. And then they usually resulted in the Wolves scoring in transition on the other end, or at least getting fouled and going to the line. Minnesota won the points off turnovers 31-2. That's a glaring difference in a game that, you know, wasn't a 40-point blowout. But I went back and watched the turnovers because I was like, watching it live, I'm like, there are so many times Booker is losing the ball. Beal is losing the ball. So here's a handful of them. Booker lost the ball trying to attack the rim in the first 90 seconds of the game. He just lost it. It just squirted out of his hands, and it wasn't the last time in this game. Grayson Allen lost the ball trying to attack the rim soon after that. Beal lost it trying to attack the baseline, even though Rudy was right there. I mean, he was shading there. He went right into it, and he just lost it. 3:50 to go in the first half. Booker again. He just straight up loses the ball. Few minutes into the start of the third quarter, Beal steps out of bounds. So that's a little bit of a different one. That was that one you were talking about.
Goofer.
Transition. Booker was pushing. Beal was open. He was going to shoot it. He stepped out of bounds. Start of the fourth quarter, Nurkic dropped the ball after receiving it 2 feet from the rim. Just dropped it. And then they were going the other way. A few minutes later, Booker throws the ball out of bounds trying to find Beal. Remember, there was like that miscommunication. I think he thought Beal was going to maybe come out to the three-point line. I think Beal thought he was going to maybe shade more to the corner. Booker just, like, he just lobbed it out of bounds. And, like, they were letting go of the rope there. I mean, was falling apart. And so, again, those were just a handful of many more that it was just, like... And that part of that is just, like, intensity a little bit. Like, obviously caring for the ball and going. Like, the whistle got to them. The non-calls got to them. I thought Minnesota would be the flustered team, possibly. And Conley talked about it heading into the series. We got to keep our head. Maybe we're not getting the calls. But it's been the opposite. It's been Phoenix, I think, that's been way more affected by how the game is being called. Sometimes tight, sometimes not. And it's, I think, that, you know, they just look unhinged here. So, great game for Minnesota. Again, I don't want to gloss over McDaniels. Conley, you said, in the first half was keeping them in it.
Yeah. Those dudes Gobert, had 14, 12, and 12. Those dudes.
Yeah.
Conley, McDaniels, and Gobert at half. And the other dudes had combined 7 for Edwards and Towns. So in the third quarter, I thought there'd be a killer attitude for the Suns that was not there.
No, Trey was spot on. It was just like game 1 where the momentum started. That place was rocking, and the Suns could never sort of stop that run, and it just continued as the game went on and got bigger and bigger, it felt like.
And I think a great game, honestly, for Anthony Edwards on a night where he didn't shoot very well at all, 3 for 12, they were pressuring him. They were making him see bodies. He was just making easy plays, getting it to other people. That's why Conley had such a big game. That's why Jaden McDaniels had such a big game. In game 1, Towns was really awesome in the post, and Edwards dominated the game. So Phoenix came out and said, we got to take these guys away. And the Wolves actually got great performances from all of their role players to be able to win this one. I think they call it a Naz Reid game when somebody outscores everybody else. I mean, you would think that Towns or Edwards would be the leading scorer here. Right. So Jaden McDaniels finally got his first Naz Reid game.
There you go.
First time outscoring all those guys. He had a baseline spinning fadeaway jumper.
That was wild.
That was crazy. You knew he was cooking at that point.
Yes.
Like, first half, I think he puts Durant in the basket, like, on a just like bully ball. I was like, whoa. That's weird to see.
Yeah.
And then I don't think I've ever seen anybody take a running baseline fadeaway jumper, and he nailed it. No problem. That was impressive.
And he did a good job to, you know, not punch another wall or punch another player, because he got into it with Booker fairly early in this game. I think he got a tech, actually, on that exchange.
Yeah, he did.
And he sort of had the crazy eyes going, and he just sort of bottled it into obviously playing well and being locked in. And they take a 2-0 lead here. I mean, this is worst-case scenario for Phoenix, of course. We'll see what happens on Friday night, Game 3. But you suddenly got the other podcast going, forget the series. It's like, what do? You trade Booker.
I saw a lot of Kevin Durant photoshopped
last night. You trade Kevin Durant. You can't trade Bradley Beal. He's got no trade clause. It's like, what do? Because you have this team, and you know, you're a second apron team. You have the new owner syndrome there still in Matt Ishbia. He's not going to live with this. Like, if they get swept here, that's two playoff wins over two seasons with some really good talent on your team. You know, is Vogel the fall guy? What do? So this is just like, oh my God, they better, if they get swept, it's going to be a long summer for Phoenix Suns fans.
Yeah,
but
totally.
Maybe game 3, and you know how quickly stuff can change again. But
pivotal game 3.
Pivotal game 3.
Pivotal game 3, yeah, for Matt Ishbia and that team, because they're paying, what I'm looking at here, probably doing some wrong math, but $180 million to their starting five. And it does suck that they lost one guy from their starting five in Grayson Allen, which was a brutal turned ankle, same ankle that he hurt in game one. He played through it. Yeah, I was sitting with Danielle on my couch, and she barely watches basketball with me, but she looked up when we saw that replay, and that was gruesome.
Yeah, that's gross.
And she yelled out, how did he walk off? And yeah, so they're missing him, and that's why I was surprised to not see enough effort from their top guys, because actually their bench outscored the Wolves bench, which is surprising. You brought up Naz Reid. Nikhil Alexander-Walker did a really good job against Devin Booker. He did.
He has been awesome.
Again, defensively, they put up multiple guys on Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal is not making them pay as the other guy, which is what happened in those three games this season. Well, two games. Beal missed one. But anyway, sucks. It sucks. Yeah, Matt Ishbia might get these guys on the phone, sell some mortgages or something. You know, they got to make money somewhere else.
Second job.
Yeah, why not?
Interesting. Interesting. Well, we can wait to talk about the Phoenix Suns, off-season dilemma, moves that they can make, should make. Yeah, trade one of their stars. Let's just wait until, I guess, after the weekend. We're going to come back on Monday. Series is going to be 3-1. It's going to be over.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be 2-2. Those are only three options because they play Friday and Sunday.
You make a good point.
So we'll talk about the Suns probably in greater detail on Monday. Any other notes from this game? Any random moments? Anything you got?
Yeah, I thought Rudy Gobert was hilarious in this game. Clearly feeling himself. He did a Euro step and got an and one in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Did go to the line and missed the free throw after it got reviewed. But you could tell he was like going for highlights. At one point, he gets like trapped on the baseline and throws a no-look hook pass to the corner, like right on the money. He threw another no-look bounce pass. I think it was the Towns for a reverse in the short roll. I've never seen these passes from Rudy
Gobert. He's trying to be flashy now.
Yeah, he was trying to be cool. Tim McMahon wrote an article about him about like basically how nobody in the NBA likes him, and he had to go hang out in the darkness, Aaron Rodgers style, for three straight days. And apparently when he was there, all he learned was, I'm doing sick passes when I get back. Guys, that was so funny.
He just
watched
and one mixtape the whole time.
You don't think I'm sweet? Watch this.
I also could not stop laughing at Anthony Edwards dapping up the official when the ref had his arm out to tell him, like, hey, move down for the inbounds. It just reaches out.
What's that, Doc?
Gives him the great dap. Very funny. And Karl-Anthony Towns, man. I laugh so much anytime this guy gets a bad foul call on him. And a lot of them are usually warranted because he's just like, he doesn't seem to know the strength of himself or how his body works sometimes. He does the greatest, like, toddler stomp off to a bad call on him. He does it all the time.
He does.
He has
great facial reaction. He stomps away. Oh, I can't believe it. It just makes me laugh every time. So it didn't matter in the end. I mean, he played with effort despite being in foul trouble. But yeah, Minnesota up 2-0. You got anything else on this one?
Nah, but the Edwards and Durant thing we saw in game one, we got one play of that in this game where he scored on Durant, and it looked cool. That's about it. I mean, Edwards didn't go all out and, you know, mimic him or talk trash to him like he did in game one. And he had a quiet night shooting the ball, only three makes as Trey was going through there, but he was hitting the right guys, and those guys were hitting shots, so he didn't need to. Yeah, they had six guys in double digits. That's the thing about this Timberwolves team. They are a better team. They have a unity that the Suns have not shown, unfortunately, to this point. Hopefully they do on Friday. I mean, I like when
you'd like
there's
to see
series.
A fight. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for those warm summer days. Pool season's coming soon, so I've been hitting the weights with Peloton and my guy Adrian Williams, trying to get my muscle on in order to expand my cannonball splash radius. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. It's easy to personalize your workout. Whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance, Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you already excel in. And their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Shout out to Adrian, Aditi, Andy, and Emma. I love you all so much. Whether you prefer to run outdoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
All right, let's keep it going here because the Pacers did their job. They got the split in Milwaukee, and they were led by Pascal Siakam. He was awesome. Pacers put up 125 points, 108 for Milwaukee, so that evens the series. Seems like Siakam is the main takeaway from this game. This guy's doing things that we haven't seen since Wilt Chamberlain. What? First player to open a postseason with consecutive 35-point, 10-rebound performances since Wilt in 1967.
What?
Siakam. Yeah.
It is high.
It's a
big
lot.
Numbers.
35 and 10, but it's never happened since Wilt in the first two games of the postseason.
Like not
but
a Shaq.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. But Siakam, man, 37 points, 11 boards, 16 of 23, 6 assists, 0 turnovers. Guy was really, really good and set the tone for Indiana here.
Yeah, there's no Giannis out there. He's the only guy on the Bucks who could possibly influence anything with Pascal Siakam because everybody else is a really poor matchup for him. Brook Lopez too slow, Bobby Portis too slow, everybody else too small. So basically, anytime the Pacers saw a mismatch, just chuck it in. I loved that because I felt like so far this season, they haven't necessarily found out how to integrate Pascal Siakam into their offense. They just want him to be a cog in this running thing, but the reason they got Siakam is for when games slow down, we can just go out and get a bucket, even if it looks weird. The game didn't slow down at all in this one, and Siakam was still just getting bucket after bucket after bucket. Love to see the Pacers living up to their name, pushing the pace.
They were
running at every opportunity. Misses, of course. Makes, they were running on. 14 to 5 fast break points for Indiana. Seems low to me, but they also outscored the Bucks 52-36 inside the paint. 38 assists on 50 makes. That happens like twice a playoffs a team gets to that level of assists. They looked awesome. Part of it was just making shots. Like game one, 8-for-38 from three, and this one, game two, 15-34. But I just thought they were much more playing Pacers basketball once again. Halliburton was in much more control, I thought, this game. In game one, when he was getting trapped, getting rid of the ball, making the right play, but a little bit passive. It never really got back to him. In this one, he would hold on to the ball a little bit longer. He would probe a little bit more. There's a lot of times when he would kick it to Miles Turner. He would just go back and get it and get back into the offense. I thought he was much more aggressive, much more poised, and this is why it looked like the regular season rather than game one, where it looked like the Pacers were scared of the playoffs.
Yeah. Were you getting a little misty-eyed watching Siakam cook there, taking us back to those Raptors days?
I couldn't. I couldn't cry because he was just so balanced. You know, he didn't just run you over with 15 straight. He hit you with each quarter, a nice balance, 9, 12, then 8, then 8. So the 37
That's Michael
total.
Jordan's thing, isn't it? Didn't MJ always say that? It's easy to get 30. You score 8 a quarter and you're going to average 32.
I thought that was Shaq.
Oh, was it Shaq?
I don't know.
MJ said it.
Okay, 32 is low for MJ.
That's a good point.
But yeah, the fact that they're running it down the Bucks' throat was very clear in this game. And Siakam, he benefited from that because he was balanced and he got interviewed. It was Dennis Scott who interviewed him after the game, right, who said, "You've never had back-to-back 30-point games in the playoffs." He said, "Wow, I didn't know that." I didn't know that. Even being a Raptors fan, I saw 30-point games. I saw him do well against the Milwaukee Bucks. But really, this was the Pacers running it down their throats over and over and over. I am surprised that it was only 14 transition points because everybody was doing it. Guys named Ben Shepherd were doing it.
What a pretty finish from Ben's mustache.
Ben. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Andrew Nembhard was running by Damian Lillard one possession. He was just hitting open shots, baseline cuts. You know, they're just sprinting. They're running sprints. and Lillard had a good game in this one. He did.
Another awesome first half.
Yeah. 15 first quarter
points. What's going on with Dame time? It's flipped.
Yeah. It starts in the first quarter. Yeah. First half, the only time he scored points in game one. Very strange. They just seem flat. They seem flat defensively. And I know Doc said it was our offense really that led to bad defense. But they weren't all over it. They just weren't ready to sprint with the boys, with Obi and Ben and Andrew. I just like saying their first names. But those guys had all of it working. And again, a game where Tyrese Halliburton only had 12 points and you can win, it's because all those guys are looking like they did in the regular season. They all contributed besides him. Seven guys contributing besides Tyrese Halliburton. So that's why this thing is 1-1 and it's going to be a long series.
Yeah, I think you're right. We'll find out when Giannis returns. It doesn't sound like it'll be game three. Is it possible game four? Is it more likely when the series comes back to Milwaukee or at all? We really don't know. The Pacers snapped a 10-game playoff losing streak that began with a Game 7 loss to Cleveland in the 2018 first-round series. So it's been a while since they've got playoff win, so good for them. And just one more note on Siakam, the balance, actually, to what you were talking about, Tass. First half, he's like the release valve. He's the guy in the corner, and he hit three triples, splashing them. Second half, he's the damn faucet, right? They had him working in the middle. He was controlling the flow of the game. I got misty-eyed because of those little push, funky little shots he has inside. He was continually just not driving immediately by Brook Lopez, but you know, Siakam does this thing where he gets the ball in the wing and he like backs up a step and then he goes. And he was just like putting his body into Brook and then flipping it up over him. And then he was splashing it out to guys either up top and Miles Turner, other guys in the corner. Again, the six assists, the zero turnovers. He just played a perfect game. Perfect. Scoring, passing, obviously, you know, tied for game high in rebounding there, I think, with Portis with 11. Just an overall incredible game from Siakam. That's just, Trey, you're right. This is why they got him. It got a guy like this for these postseason matchups because, you know, he's proven it before that he's got some reps under his belt, too. That helps.
He's better than Jay Crowder and Pat Connaughton.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Yeah.
And I would say last night, Bobby Portis was brutal, and Brook Lopez was brutal. Like, they couldn't – the Bucks couldn't really trust either of them. Like, they needed Brook's offense. He was hitting threes, hit six of them last night, but so slow in transition. And then Bobby Portis just did not have a good game. He was making a ton of mistakes on defense, and he just didn't look locked in for this one. So this was worst case scenario for Milwaukee, I thought, where they just look completely outclassed athletically because the Pacers were flying. They were flying, and they did a good job, Rick Carlisle did, of not playing literally everybody on their roster. They basically played eight guys, unlike in game one when they played 11, I think, in the first quarter. Sorry, Isaiah.
Yeah, we'll see if our man Mark Daigneault repeats that with OKC, because he played 11. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of guys. I think you get to lessen it a little bit. Maybe
all
11
on OKC are good, though. That's
They are good.
Although, you don't want Aaron Wiggins out there?
I want more Aaron Wiggins than Gordon. Gordon Hayward's not playing great offense right now. Yeah. He's not. Defensively, they're fine. They're all trying. I was surprised to see guys who won the championship three freaking years ago, Chris Middleton and Brook Lopez, they just had a brain fart together, and they had a miscommunication where the Pacers just get a layup in a half-court set. I mean, how? How? They've been playing together for so long. How do you miscommunicate? How do you not get the ball in and have a 5 seconds call? 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. You're in the backcourt. There's not pressure by any means. Damian Lillard was just running a different cut. I guess Chris Middleton wasn't ready for it. Fans left that game at Pfizer Forum midway through the fourth. They're done midway through the fourth. Home game. It was all surprising to see. And there's just too much happening. I guess that's why I couldn't cry for Siakam. Probably I just wasn't overwhelmed. There just wasn't enough. No, I didn't notice all the rebounds. Actually, he was scoring against everybody.
Yeah.
I don't think I will remember a single basket from this game when it all comes down to it. What was the great Siakam move in this game when he went by Brooke over and over and over again, when he scored over Middleton, when he went through Lillard? Hey, Jake Crowder, let's try you. That obviously didn't work multiple times. There wasn't anything sexy, but that's what Siakam does. He just scores over and over, and they need Giannis desperately because him against Bobby Portis, that's the primary matchup in this one. That's who's supposed to be stopping him. It ain't going to work. I was a little surprised. I thought Bobby could, but the lateral movement ain't there. So Giannis got to come back for that.
So early in the third quarter, we had a little minor incident. I guess it was between Nembhard and Patrick Beverley. And Bobby Portis then got into like a clapping match with Tyrese Halliburton and Nembhard. I guess the best way to call it that. And he said, Bobby Portis, after the game, quote, "I mean, just quite frankly, they're front runners, bro. Y'all can just tweet that or whatever it is, bro. When the shit going good, they laughing, clapping and all that. When it's going bad, they not saying nothing." So Bobby calling the Pacers front runners, which we love this. We always want this as we get further and further into these series as the animosity kicks up a notch here. So that's what Bobby's saying.
I wanted a Bobby Tech or Flagrant because I have drafted him in our instigator draft. Yeah. We'll get to a little later in the show. Yeah. Nothing from Bobby P.
Nope, just clapping. Hard just claps. Do you want a half a point for a hard clap in somebody's face? Yeah, you do. All right, anything else on Pacers Bucks? Okay, let's go to the final game from last night. It was the nightcap. It was Luka and Kyrie leading the Mavs over the Clippers 96-93. I thought this was a very weird game.
Oh, yeah.
A very ugly game at times. But they tied their series at one game apiece in a game in which Kawhi Leonard returned. But what do you want to start with from the Mavs win here?
You want to go quarter by quarter? Because the weirdness level started at the beginning.
It was a weird game.
I will say just the effort of the Dallas Mavericks in that first quarter was awesome. That started things for them, and it just didn't stop. It really started with Luka getting down. I've never seen him in a lower defensive position ever. I mean, he really got down. Everybody blocking shots in that first quarter for them. Everybody. They had five blocks in that first quarter. Seeing the P.J. Washington, supposed to be their third guy. This is peak J. Washington. He was this is what they traded for him. He was so good. We'll get to the offense later. But I thought the defense at the beginning of the game, where he was helping out, two blocks in that first quarter. This team,
they looked like a desperate team.
Yeah,
hey, Phoenix, take note.
Yep.
You're down 1-0. You really should try and win this game. At least put forward some energy and some effort and try and punch first. And they at least did that defensively, because a lot of shots were not falling from either of these teams. But it's a good point. Sorry to cut you off.
No. It was weird.
Yeah, it was weird. I was like, the lower third Chiron for this team hasn't scored in X amount of minutes was getting worn out. Coming up,
it was a lot.
So many times. I'm like, whoa, man, the Mavs haven't scored for 4 minutes. And then 4 minutes later, it was the Clippers haven't scored for 4 minutes. Just felt like that all night. You're right. It was the defense that did it. Luka's defense was great. I thought Kyrie Irving did a really good job on James Harden, like pressuring the ball. He got a steal from behind as well. I saw that ESPN Stats and Info said the Clippers shot 2 of 17 from the floor when Luka Doncic was the primary defender. They're calling this guy White Claw now.
Oh, that's good. Up against Kawhi.
Yeah, I know. It's not bad, man.
That's pretty good.
It's not bad. Shout out to Jason Gallagher. I saw him tweet that earlier today.
I didn't see that.
White Claw. He was fired up, though, and he was doing enough defensively that when the game turned in the fourth quarter, Luka hit a couple of big shots, a big like 12-0 run basically for the Mavs when they went slow. Zubats wasn't nearly as effective in this game. It eventually got played off the floor in the fourth quarter because Maxi Kleba was great in this one.
So
he can be an up, he can be a down, but they need him to be good, especially because Gafford went out with an injury. So they just rode the small ball lineup, and their small ball lineup was a lot better than the Clippers were last night. I guess when they go small, it feels like the Mavs somehow have a little bit more size than LA does, because LA has to play man, they got to play Westbrook, and Harden, I mean, he's a bigger dude, but he's going to be on the perimeter as well. So, I don't know, I like that you called it peak jumper, jumper?
Sure.
Washington? All right, good, because through the first three quarters, he was PU Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then he scored 10 of his 18 in the fourth and hit two monster threes. Peak jumper it is, because I was thinking PG Washington. Pretty good.
Pretty good.
I like peak jumper better, though.
Yeah, that's all he has to be with when you're playing with Kyrie and Luka. Just be pretty good, and that's why they traded for him. And that's why they traded for Daniel Gafford. To see Daniel Gafford go down with an injury and Derek Lively come in and be enough was awesome. And Kleba was so good. Nobody's going to talk about Kleba, but he was so good defensively.
He hit one of those big threes in the fourth as well. He got that huge offensive rebound where Luka was going nuts for. He was loving that. He played great. He played 28 minutes, Kleba did. Yeah, and part of that's Gafford's injury. There's also the Tim Hardaway Jr. injury, so his minutes were limited. That's, fine. They had been getting more and more limited as the season went on. But I think, that's sort of good news maybe for Kidd. The decision is made. It's like, all right, we can just go. We like Josh Green maybe a little bit more athleticism than Tim Hardaway Jr. in this role, defensively for sure, too. So, yeah, it was a fight. And it was far from over. There were so many times where I was like, oh, my God. The Mavs might be going down 2-0 here because Clippers are hanging around. Kawhi's doing just enough. What did you think of Kawhi? Let's get to that. Obviously, his first game back in a long time. The box score is not bad. A lot of shots were coming up short, which may be to be expected, but what do you think? How would you grade Kawhi's first game back here?
I'd probably give him a C+.
Yeah.
He looks super rusty to me. 17 field goal attempts, he made 7 of them, 15 points. Didn't make a 3, but in general, I thought he was moving pretty well and tired out as the night went on, but I guess he hadn't played in nearly 2 months, a month and a half at the very least, but I think he'll get better. I think it was good to see him out there, and to be able to play a huge chunk of minutes was encouraging, because you have to imagine he's going to get into a rhythm as the series goes longer and longer, because this one doesn't feel like it's going to be done in 5 games.
No.
A reverse gentleman or anything like that, but good stuff. It was good to see Kawhi back, to the point where you're like, oh yeah, I remember this guy.
Yeah.
He gets a steal from behind and takes it down for a dunk, that kind of stuff. Just, he looks like Kawhi at times.
Mm-hmm. At times, for sure. When Dallas would zoom out and say, we got plowed by a non-Kawhi team in game one, a game without Kawhi, and then we beat them with Kawhi, it seems flipped. It just seems wrong. But at the same time, they weren't ready for game one like they were ready for game two. And so that was where it changed. Kawhi's shots were contested, but they just weren't going home. I thought he should have been found a little bit more. He was calling for the ball in the fourth quarter when that Chiron was ticking up and up and up for the Clippers, minute after minute after minute, where they did not score. No field goal in whatever it was, 5 minutes. It was a long time. They were going to... Norm was trying to be hot off the bench.
Yeah, he missed a couple that he definitely could make. Yeah. He had that one three, but then he came up short on a little classic Norm floater there.
Yeah.
Missed another wide open look.
Yeah, he missed a contested one too, where he looked like he was trying to do a heat check. And I thought Kawhi should shoot it, but that's just me. That's a team that's playing together. At the same time, I do think their size isn't a problem, as you brought up with the Mavericks, because they're fine at the 5 with Zubats and Plumlee, but they are a small team beyond the 5. So Dallas can hang with them. It's great. It's just a great series we have.
You think
here. This
one's going long? Do you?
Like
it feels
I
like
assume
it. You could
so.
See a split happening also in Dallas, and then suddenly we had a 3-game series, a big pivotal game 5. some would call it.
As long as Westbrook doesn't double, don't double one pass away from Kyrie Irving. Come on, man.
Yeah, that was a
come on.
An interesting decision. But yeah, the Mavs hit the timelier shots in this. I thought Paul George was going to pull it out at the end when he sort of went on a little mini run there where he was either scoring or he was setting up Zubats. Like, he had a couple beautiful setups to him late, but it was too little too late. And man, Luka was... he was fired up, eh?
Yeah.
He was screaming, I feel like, all night. Like, again, good. You want to see that from your star. You're trying to, like, you know, he didn't have an incredible shooting game and took some weird ones, but you're like, he was putting forth the effort defensively and just like, come on, we need this. Like, he was playing like it was game 7 of the NBA Finals.
He was playing hard.
Just screaming at the crowd, talking junk to them. So they got it done. Anything else on Clips Mavs?
I almost lost my lunch when Luka Doncic threw that bounce pass in the press break. Like the no-look two-hand bounce pass. I guess he looked off Terrence Mann just enough to send him going one way, and it just like squibbled right by his little fingies to Kyrie
Irving.
And then it worked out nice because he was able to like run more clock because there's nobody around him.
Wow.
That was a scary one.
That one, right at the end there, where Terrence Mann was just enough on his heels because he had somebody to guard at midcourt. But if he was ready, he could have easily had that, but he just was on the toes. Yeah, that pass.
Wild ending to that one. All right, so we got two series there from last night, 1-1, which is great.
Hold on. Sorry, question about Ian Eagle. Great on the call, as always. At one point, I kind of was half tuned in. He said, he just named some artists. Sade, Madonna, Prince, and Bomber. He threw C. Bomber in there.
That's because Grant Hill had just like previously called him Bomber. I think it was after that Terrence Mann dunk, basically?
Yeah.
Oh. And it was like they showed the Terrence Mann dunk, and then Steve Ballmer's like right in the background, so the camera does like the dunk, re-rack the focus onto him, and Grant Hill's like, and Bomber's loving it.
Oh,
so then Ian Eagle's like, oh, he's on a first name basis now?
All right, like Madonna.
So just one name. Yeah, just one name. He's no longer Beyonce, Steve Ballmer.
Sade.
Sade's a weird one, but respect.
She's amazing.
Deep pull.
Just dropping. Yeah, he's a one name guy, I guess, now. He's Ballmer. Just goes by Ballmer.
What's up with Ballmer not splurging on some t-shirts, though?
Wow.
What's going
on
there? Like, it can't even go buy 18,000 free t-shirts. It's just like a normal regular season game.
That's a good point,
actually.
It's
sort of weird when you think about it. I feel like, maybe they're not the only one. Now I'm trying to think. Did Milwaukee have t-shirts last night either? I'm not 100% sure. But anyway, I mean, I think the Clippers should be doing that thing. Is he trying to save it for the new arena? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe they're just not making a lot of money here. Maybe they haven't sold a lot of seats for the Intuit Dome. That's what's called it.
Yeah. I mean, all the money went to the toilets. Yeah. And the wall, this wall thing.
And
that
the wall.
Got. I hope they have free t-shirts when they go into their new place.
And Kawhi.
Yeah.
And
Kawhi.
I don't know.
Yeah. And now that I said that out loud, I'm like, oh, wait, maybe they didn't have them in Milwaukee either. Now, on Milwaukee's, I can be like, all right, you won a championship. Like, you've been here, done that. I get that a little bit. But what if the Clippers? They've never won anything. They need all the help they can get with their home crowd, is my point. Give them a towel. Give them a t-shirt. Give them something. All right. Let's move on to some news. 76ers guard Tyrese Maxey is the 2023-24 NBA Most Improved Player. Maxey upped his scoring average by more than 5 points, from 20.3 to nearly 26 points per game. He also averaged a career-high 6.2 assists this season for the 76ers. He just beat out Kobe White in a very close vote. Maxey, 51 first place votes, so 319 total points in the voting. Kobe White of the Bulls, 32 first place votes and 305 total points. So TK, it was very close for your guy. Kobe White actually appeared on more ballots.
That's right.
When you add them all up. Got some electoral college shenanigans going on here. Jesus, what is it with this country? But in the end, Maxey, a well-deserved MIP. But, I mean, man, people get fired up about this award. There's a lot of hot takes flying last night after Kobe came second.
Well, yeah, I mean, Maxey's percentages all went down, so you can understand why he shouldn't have been an MIP. But that's how it goes. In this decade, the last five winners were all first-time All-Stars. Ingram, Randall, Ja, Lowry, Markkanen, and now Tyrese Maxey. Prior to that, it was like Paul George becoming an All-Star for the first time. Goran Dragic didn't make All-Star, but made All-NBA that season. Jimmy Butler went to his first All-Star of the game when he won it. CJ McCollum, he just got one. Maybe they thought he was going to go to an All-Star game eventually, but he never did.
Yeah.
Giannis went to an All-Star game. Oladipo went to an All-Star game. Siakam went to an All-Star game the next season. So you basically got to become an All-Star, but I'm just going to keep calling Kobe White the PMIP. People's most improved player, because he is on more ballots. It worked out perfectly for me, because now I can pretend like he actually won when clearly Maxey did.
Apparently, I saw Drew Stevens tweet this margin between Maxey and Kobe White, so 319 to 305 for most improved. Slimmest since Monte Ellis with 352 points, narrowly beat out Kevin Martin with 349 points.
Kevin Martin.
In 07. That was decided by 3 points. You know, basically 1 second place vote if they were still having the 5-3-1 back then in 07. I can't really remember. But anyway, it's a tight one here, Tess.
I just love looking down this, the voting and how it was all done. So I guess that's why I got people got riled up. I got riled up in a good way just to see guys like Şengün was third. He had a fantastic year before he got hurt. So I'm sure he would have been higher, but a good spot for him.
Mm-hmm.
J-Dub, Jalen Williams was fourth, going all the way down. Avdija did have a good season, going all the way down to Aaron Nesmith with the Pacers. It's totally true with just one vote. And Shea being on there, he's a stud. That's true. And I knew people would vote. Only one did, though.
They only thought there'd be more, right?
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, that's all.
Quick trivia, because Maxey is the second 76er to win this award. Joining, do you guys know who did it for Philadelphia? MIP?
Most improved?
It's a tough name.
It's not anywhere.
Circa mid-90s. Not
Elton.
When you were teeny bops.
When we were little teeny bops.
Hawkins.
No. This guy, I think, scored... Did this guy score 50 in a game once? I think he did.
Oh, 50.
Delk Dog?
Oh,
Tony Delk?
No. The little... Dana Barros.
Yes.
Nice one. He did. Yeah, nice.
He gave it to me then. Yeah.
The voting for that year, Dana Barros, Elliot Perry.
Wow. Oh, he pulled his socks up taller.
That's right. Scott Burrell, George Mirison. And Alan Houston. Those were the top five that year.
Mirison was good that year. I think he was.
He absolutely was. But you're right. There used to be a time when this award would go to your Aaron Brooks and, you know, your Dana Barroses. And then it definitely changed. And it's like, you've almost called it before. I feel like it was you, TK. Like, it's not like runner-up MVP, but it's like tier two MVP weird way.
Yeah.
It's like, you're not in the MVP conversation, but we think you might get there. And you're tier two this year. So you've made that hell of a jump. And Maxey has definitely have. He's look at what he's done in these first two games, obviously. In losses, but for the Sixers. He's been amazing. He looks like a superstar. And he is, honestly.
He deserves it these days.
Yeah. So there you go.
We've never made a list of guys who've won most improved player and then went on to win most valuable player.
Giannis. So it's Giannis.
Giannis Antetokounmpo. Yeah.
That's got to be it.
Yeah. I wonder if that could be it.
I think so. Congrats to Maxey. There you go. Yeah. Kobe White, the PIMP.
Yeah, that was a fun list.
Is Kobe White the new Aaron Brooks? Only time will tell. They both wear number zero.
They
shoot a lot of threes.
Yeah.
Aaron Brooks was good, man.
Here's a fun question.
You have the new Aaron Brooks.
on that list, will we have next year's most improved player? Because that happens from time to time. Those guys lower down, maybe a J-Dub.
Interesting.
You know, maybe someone else. Maxey was on a most improved a couple years ago.
Maxey, his second season.
Finished
was
low.
Sixth.
Yeah.
Sixth.
Yeah, so.
It'll be Jalen Williams next year.
Yeah, I think
because he'll probably make All-Star. So I think
it's a good
MIP.
It's a good bet. It's a great bet.
Whoa! Mac is back! You ever wish you could have it both ways? I do. Like a zero-calorie cheeseburger or staying up late but not feeling exhausted in the morning. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but you can have it both ways with Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I've got some polos, some tees, some undies, and I love them. Simple, soft, stylish. In fact, I'm wearing Mack Weldon right now. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. If you told me my silver PK polo was made from 100% cotton, I would 100% believe you. But those antimicrobial silver threads keep me feeling fresher longer. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code NODUNKS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code NODUNKS.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, moving on, or sticking with Maxi, I guess I should say. In its last two-minute report for the Knicks' miraculous victory over the 76ers in Game 2, the NBA has ruled that Tyrese Maxey was fouled multiple times during a frenetic defining sequence there near the end of the game, and that Nick Nurse called for a timeout, but the referees didn't see it. Tass, you're rolling your eyes, but let me give you the specifics. The league said Jalen Brunson grabbed Maxey's jersey before the ball was inbounded, and that Josh Hart then bumped Maxey as he caught the inbounds pass, sending him falling to the ground, And of course, once again, that Nurse was calling for a timeout before the ball was inbounded. So not the one where Maxey then was on the ground and it was sort of not really in his hands, and then Nurse was once again trying to call timeout. They said, no, not that one. Maybe the one before Lowry inbounded the ball.
Yeah, maybe. Which I don't buy at all.
Because you think he pump faked it.
Well, his hands were inches apart. for our metric fans, you know, centimeters apart. There was distance. And so he could have easily called it. If he was out of bounds, he could have easily just said, hey. He wasn't doing that. He wasn't signaling to the referee.
He was thinking about it, wanted to. Anyway.
But anyway, you could have called a foul of Maxey getting hit. You could have. That's fine. That's fine.
Well, this changes everything, rather.
Yeah, right. They should have gone back prior to those 2 minutes in the 2 minutes report, 2:30 left. Nurse challenged something, which was overturned, and gave the Sixers the ball. I didn't understand how they overturned that thing. That's a mistake. That should be on the report. Kyle Lowry smacked Dante DiVincenzo, but somehow they said he hit the ball. Anyways, they got the ball. 2:37 left. I know. The thing that should have happened was Maxey, yes, there could have been a foul against him, but he also could have just held on to the ball while he was on the ground. That was strange. He kind of gave it away.
That's what he said.
I know.
Yeah. I got to be stronger with the ball. When I get on the floor, I got to call timeout. But it is what it is.
Yeah. He has said that twice now. Yeah. He said it after the game 2, and then he said it out, you know, when he was asked about it from the inside guys after winning most improved. And, you know, kudos to him. That's
amazing.
I'm convinced that guy is going to be a superstar if he is not already. That's what you say when you're a superstar. But yeah, look, there was a lot of contact there. But Trey, you said it. It's the home crowd. It's the home cooking. The pandemonium going on at that moment after the first three. That you know, there's a lot going on. Look, I mean, look, they missed things. They missed it. There's contact. It could have been called. Yes. I think it would have been called in Philadelphia. I truly do. The guy's held for a second, and then he's knocked over. Hell, they usually just call a foul when somebody hits the ground and nothing happens. But
unless you're the Knicks. Yeah, unless you're the Knicks, because Dante DiVincenzo also got away with a form tackle earlier this year.
That's true. That's true.
Sorry, Asar Thompson, but between that one and this one must be the most digital ink ever in some last 2 minute reports. This one, I was scrolling forever to even get to this incident.
Yeah, the other one I should have noted, just for transparency, Joel Embiid should have been called for a foul against Dante DiVincenzo. With 35 seconds left, he made contact with DiVincenzo's head and face. Slash face. Head slash face.
Not both of them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is all silly. You like these things?
No. And it should take shorter to read than 2 minutes. But it did. The 2 minute report should not.
Oh, you need a report on the last 2 minute report.
There's a video. I can film Trey reading the last 2 minute report, and it's going to be longer than 2 minutes, so it's not going to be a short.
Funny,
it's going to be
a
long.
Yeah, it's a good bit. And now we go to the report on the last 2 minute report.
It just gets
sorry. Does it get longer and longer, or does it get shorter and shorter? What's funny? I'm not sure. We'll figure that out. All right, another news. J.J. Redick will interview for the head coaching job of the Charlotte Hornets, according to Shams. Redick is a 15-year NBA vet. He's got no professional or collegiate coaching experience. You know, at any level, but since retiring in 2021, Redick has been a broadcaster at ESPN, calls games for the network, appears on numerous studio shows, and of course is hosting podcasts, killing the podcast game. So, yeah, what do you think here, TK, of Redick's name popping up once again in one of these coaching vacancies here in Charlotte?
Well, it makes me think that J.J. Redick is definitely going to be a coach. Eventually.
Right.
I don't necessarily think the Hornets is the job that he would want to take as his first job, especially considering he's on top of the world as a media guy right now. Imagine ESPN loses two finals broadcasters in a single season because they both go to coaching. It was supposed to be Doc Rivers.
Right.
He's a coach now.
Yeah.
J.J. Redick took over for him, but he might be going to coaching. Not surprising, I suppose, that he would surface in North Carolina, where he was a legend, playing for Duke there. But I really think that J.J., with this and then interviewing for the Raptors job last summer,
yep.
I think he's just getting interview experience, because I think eventually he's going to be the coach for LeBron James's Las Vegas team.
Ooh, okay. And maybe we'll have experience before that?
No.
Interesting.
No, I think
going in fresh.
Yeah, I think he's going to be learning things and understanding what it's like to like go through these interviews with front offices and that kind of thing. And then whenever LeBron gets a team, they will have 4 years of podcasting together. Basically JJ's audition tape, and then he takes over.
Do you think they'll crack a special bottle of wine when
certainly,
he says you are the
certainly.
Coach?
I don't know what vintage, but we'll see.
Do you think they'll do it on the podcast?
Hire him on the podcast. I think they should.
They should.
Yes,
you should do that.
Yeah.
It's a great idea. Yeah, I guess also Celtics coach Joe Mazzulla tried to hire Redick as an assistant coach last offseason. But Redick passed that down. And obviously, yeah, he said the Raptors won. And then now this one, we'll see what happens. He wouldn't be the first, you know, NBA vet who a couple years out of the league, or some guys very quickly out of the league, with no experience, just take a job, right?
Jason Kidd.
Steve Nash.
Chauncey Billups.
Yeah, so I mean,
and they're all killing it, man.
Yeah, right. They're not
right.
Absolutely,
right. You probably won't.
There have
experience.
Been some. The Fisher, Derek Fisher, did
fired.
Fired.
Did Steve Kerr have any coaching experience?
No.
Steve Kerr didn't have coaching experience,
front
but he had
office.
GM experience.
Yeah, that's true. True.
And
true.
He was retired for years.
Yeah, yeah,
a long time. I don't know why J.J. Redick is interviewing for Charlotte though. He's not taking this job. It doesn't
probably
feel
not.
Like he's taking this job. You got interviewed by the Raptors. You had Joe Mazzulla while he was golfing with J.J. Redick, apparently last year. He said, hey, you want to get into our training camp? Just be an assistant with us. But he had a golfing trip to go on. I do believe that J.J. Redick had a golfing trip. So he said, nah, I am not doing that. That's what he told Pablo Torre.
Taking a page out of Doc Rivers' playbook.
Yeah, he's busy. That's why he's busy. He told Pablo Torre that on a podcast. And why I say I doubt he's taking the Charlotte job. He lives in the New York area. He's already coaching somebody. He's coaching Knox Redick, his son. Mm-hmm. Why does he got to go? I don't know about the Vegas thing. That's far. I could see something a little more local. But I don't think he wants it. He's obviously jumped into this media world very, very well. Mm-hmm. Why now? I mean, coaching takes a lot out of you. He's young. 10, 15 years from now?
He misses the juice, man.
Yeah. He misses
true.
It for sure. He absolutely misses
JJ Redick's name's never been hotter.
Yeah. That's very
There's
true.
Only 30 of these jobs. Yep. Well, might be 32 in a couple of years.
Still a low number.
Yeah. I think I like your thinking here. I can see the hell, probably Sam Presti will be in the front office.
Could be. Because
LeBron can't stop talking about him. It'll, you know, be LeBron in ownership of some sort. Maybe Redick will be the coach. But I'm most intrigued by that, which I do agree with, if he'll get some reps. Like have a maybe a Charlotte year two, three, four, whatever, before he eventually is LeBron's head coach. Maybe not. Maybe not. We will see.
Yeah. Young guys are fine, too. Your Dagnalls, your Will Hardy. You know, some of them are fine. This guy knows. He's already coaching, as I said. He's coaching a kids' team. They run good stuff. They run good stuff.
What, do you crush the tape?
Of course. No, I just listened to Pablo Torre's podcast. Oh, okay. I heard all about it. They're really good.
Pablo Torre.
Monty Williams. Oh, yeah, he was an assistant for a long time. Former player. I'm just thinking of former players that jumped on.
Final piece of news, and it's weird. The NBA and Denver police are looking into an incident in which Jokic's brother, allegedly, Jokic's brother, I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is definitely his brother, was seen punching a fan after the Nuggets 101-99 victory over the Lakers. So you're seeing the video here on YouTube. This was shared by TMZ and other outlets. The bro there climbing over seats to confront another guy, and he just clocked the dude in the face. The guy took the punch. And that's sort of it. This is all we know. And I don't think there's been any, you know, charges filed, and we're just waiting on the NBA, I guess, the Denver police looking into it. But, you know, this brother definitely has a checkered past when it comes to altercations or incidents in the arena and then outside the arena. He was arrested for allegedly choking and pushing a woman while the two were inside a Denver apartment. Now, he was charged with second-degree assault, false imprisonment, obstruction of phone service. He pled guilty to the misdemeanor count of obstruction of phone service and felony trespassing. The other charges were dismissed. That was in 2020. But this is that bro. I forget how you say his name. It's a very difficult name. Serbian name that I would butcher.
Troy says it right every time.
Do I?
Yeah, I think so.
Strahinja?
Okay.
I don't know. The other brother is Nemanja.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because of Nemanja Bjelica.
Yeah. Classic.
Yeah.
Classic Serbian name.
So, yeah. I don't know what you have to add to this. I mean, he definitely punches the guy in the face.
Definitely punches the guy.
I had to watch this video over and over and over again because that person who took that punch was fine. He bounced back as it like really quickly and didn't say anything was wrong or he just, you know, was kind of calm about getting punched in the face.
Yeah.
It sure felt like, and it felt like the unfortunate part was it seemed like it was around all the Nuggets players' families. And
yeah, you can see Jokic's wife and child right there, behind the guys, the bros. Yeah,
yeah, but it was just strange to see a large man, you know, have the angle because he's over top. You know, he's a row up, and you know, didn't pop a guy who passed out. That person just took it and bounced right back, and it didn't seem like there was a lot of not much of a melee going on.
Yeah,
it's just like everybody reacted to it kind of calmly. And
as calmly, I guess, as you can.
Yeah,
for one guy getting punched in the face.
Absolutely. And again, like, they knew it was coming in a way. Like, they must have been going back and forth.
Obviously, something is said that has offended them, or they've done something that has offended them.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that makes it right to go punch a guy in the face. And we'll see, like, will the NBA be like, well, there's video right there. I mean, we can't have you in the arena. You're suspended from the playoffs or whatever. They might do that.
Those guys are every game.
They are.
Yeah, yeah. And this is in Denver.
Yeah.
This is not on the road, which makes it a little weird. But what do you think, TK?
I don't really have much of a take. Like,
yeah.
This is his brother, you know? I don't really care if he gets suspended. The brother. Who cares? Literally, who cares? Sons and Four guy. That happened in Denver as well, that fight. So maybe have him fight that guy. Remember the Sons and Four guy? Got a fight.
Four.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to that guy? Was he allowed back into the postseason? I know he was turned into a hero in Phoenix.
Don't care.
But we'll see what the police or the NBA or the Nuggets themselves do with this after the footage there, which is, I mean, pretty clearly you can see the bro punching him. But the guy took it. He just seemed to walk up. Like, damn. All
right.
And maybe that's all it should be. I don't know. Maybe. Before we go, though, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the night. Wow.
Twitter.
We've got an update on the instigator draft that we did prior to the playoffs. We all picked players likely to have a technical or flagrant. And to recap our teams here, Skeets' team was Beverly, Niang, and Nurkic. BNN, all business.
That's right.
Business News Network. I just made all these nicknames up.
Okay.
Some, well, that one's fine. Tatum, Portis, and Edwards for me. TPE. The Teapot Exchange. We're going to spill some tea about stuff. Eh, okay. Whatever. Trays. Doncic, Gobert, and Wagner. DGW. What do you think? What do you think? This is a, like a
DGW.
Don't
flat.
Go no. Well, where my fist is.
Not bad. No. Dogs Gone Wild.
Oh, it's better.
Dogs Gone Wild.
These guys are dogs. These guys are dogs.
I love it.
Skeets had a lead going into Tuesday's game. 1-0-0 because Niang had a technical foul.
Yep.
But then Doncic, the dog, came through with one at the end of the third quarter, which was an interesting one because he scored, but he wanted an and one.
Yeah, yeah.
He wanted an extra
up,
one.
Yep.
He was angry. So now it is one for Skeets, one for Trey, zero for myself.
Ooh,
point
looking,
for TK.
Still looking for your first one, but you have Tatum playing tonight.
Yeah. Portis, who was getting into it that we talked about earlier
in
the show.
Yeah, oh, Portis clapping. Point.
Yeah.
I mean, Beverly was sort of started that too. I know. I was getting excited. I was like, well, we might get some points here. No, just some clapping.
I do feel like all of our guys that we picked, though, are getting in the mix,
yeah,
which I think is pretty good. Because like, I'm watching these, I'm like, ooh, who should I have drafted? Who else could I have picked? Drew Eubanks, I think, would have been maybe an interesting choice.
Mm-hmm.
Jaden McDaniels as well. He was getting fired up, and I kind of had forgotten like the incident he had with Klay Thompson earlier this season and, of course, punching the wall last year. But, yeah, it's nice to see all of our guys are living up to their reputation.
I know. It's just another reason I'm upset that this Wolves-Suns series could be over in a hurry, because I feel like the more this one goes on, you got Gobert, I got Nurk.
I got Edwards.
You got Edwards. Like, yeah, totally. It's like you could see it. It's starting to manifest, but it's got to go long. It usually has to go long. We got to get into the 5, 6, 7 where people are furious with one or another. But then again, I guess the flip side of that is you're getting punked. You're down 3-0. Nurk has had enough. I want the hell out of this game.
Yeah.
You know?
You're Andrew
elbow to the
Bynum.
Face. And just, exactly. Get me the hell out of here. Get me to Cancun. Mm-hmm. I guess that's in play. All right. So 1-1-0 right now in the playoffs instigator draft. Two games on tonight. That's it. Thank God. Because Survivor's on as well.
Sure.
Heat Celtics, 7 o'clock on TNT. We're going to be on playback for that one. So make sure you hit that link in the show notes. Game 2 here. Boston trying to go up 2-0. Heat trying to split that. And then at 9:30, it's Pelicans Thunder. I've leaned in hard to my take that the Thunder are going to crush the Pelicans tonight after sort of maybe getting the jitters out of the way there in Game 1. But we will see. We will see. So two games. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern to break them all down. And the news. I think there's another award announced tonight. I can't remember which one.
There is.
But there is, on TNT, probably prior to those games. But I can't remember. Anyway, we'll talk about it on tomorrow's show. Thank you for joining us live. Hit the like button, subscribe. Podcast listeners, 5-star ratings and reviews. Till tomorrow, Clipper Bros!
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, it's pronounced Dagnault when talking about the Thunder's head coach. Although, apparently he was introduced as that, and then the Thunder had a text release that said he was Dagnault. Not that it's a huge difference. Dagnault versus Dagnault. I don't know what to pronounce him. I don't know. That's all I'm saying. What does it matter? Dagnault. The
I like
French
I like your French version.
That's
how about Dag's Gone Nault?
Brace the day, people.